This week, the coup in Niger last Wednesday is the fourth military takeover in West Africa in 3 years. Will the Niger coup leaders heed the regional bloc ECOWAS's warning to reinstate ousted President Mohamed Bazoum? Also, VOA's English to Africa service celebrates 60 years of multi-platform programming to the continent. What does the future hold? Straight Talk Africa starts now. Welcome to Straight Talk Africa. Niger announced overnight that it was reopening its borders with several of its neighbors a week after a coup that has been condemned by foreign powers and raised fears of a wider conflict in West Africa's Sahel region. The army ousted the democratically elected President Mohamed Bazoum. West African leaders are threatening military action against Niger unless Bazoum is restored to office. Three other West African nations ruled by military juntas, Mali, Burkina Faso and Guinea, are supporting the action in Niger. To discuss the latest developments in Niger, we are joined via Zoom by Her Excellency Hilda Soka Mafute, the Africa Union Ambassador to the United States. In studio is Nyaka Lagoke, Assistant Professor of History and Pan-Africana Studies at Lincoln University in Pennsylvania. And via Skype here in Washington, we're joined by Kamisa Kamara, Senior Advisor for Africa at the United States Institute of Peace. Welcome to all of you to the Straight Talk Africa program today. All right, Madam Ambassador, I want to begin with you, if you can hear me. Yes, yes, Madam Ambassador. Yes, welcome to the program. And I want to ask you first, what actions has the Africa Union taken since the coup was announced in Niger?
There's a lot that African Union has done so far in there. Also, one thing that you should know, let me put it this way. Thank you for this opportunity to discuss African Union peace and security mechanisms, which we put in place whenever such has happened in the continent. And also to inform the audience on the critical role that the African Union in this vital sector of peace and security and stability on our continent. Mm-hmm. Let me put it this way. Yeah. Africa is changing. The young generation is aware of the important role that Africa is playing at the international stage, and they are demanding their rights as Africans to all their destiny. Yes, there has been a coup in Niger, which is a very big challenge, which is... the status quo, as well as vis-a-vis external forces that are motivated by African resources who are also on the continent. You actually just don't know sometimes who will be pushing for such to happen. I, for one, I was very sad of the coup in Niger, because it's one country that I've been really following, though I follow all the countries on the continent, but Niger, I would see the progress of Niger. And also having this president who is democratically elected, it's something that it never came to my mind.
Madam Ambassador, is there any specific action that has been taken by the AU up to this point?
Yeah, the African Union is working with its state members on a number of continental policies, including peace and security, stability, and good governance, among others. That's what African Union, the step that it has taken is to discuss with other countries. Remember last week, most of the member state heads were in Russia. And that's when this happened. And to put together what should be done and what should be moved forward. Mm-hmm. Yes, President of Nigeria has taken steps in appointing the mediator. That is through African Union. You should know if a member state is doing whatever it's doing, the first thing that should be done is at the regional level. What is the regional level? It's the ECOWAS. Mm-hmm. ECOWAS headed by the president of Nigeria, the new president of Nigeria. And, yes.
And actually talking about ECOWAS, Kamara, the ECOWAS actually has threatened to use force to oust the military junta if they do not reinstate the democratically elected civilian president, Mohamed Bazoum. How likely is the use of force?
Well, that's a good question. I think we have to look at the ECOWAS and analyze the ECOWAS's actions and declarations, given the history of coups in West Africa recently. As you've mentioned in your introduction, between 2020 and 2023, this is the sixth coup that we're experiencing in the ECOWAS region. Two coups in Mali, two coups in Burkina, one in Guinea. And the ECOWAS was criticized for being too soft on the coup leaders and the juntas in those countries, allowing for further coups to happen. And so what we're seeing now is Nigeria being back as the leader of the ECOWAS, President Tinubu showing true leadership and basically being assertive in demonstrating the might and the legitimacy of the ECOWAS as a regional body that will not allow destabilizing forces in its region. And also, which has been mentioned by the ambassador earlier, this is a democratically elected president who's being ousted without any visible tensions being shown and seen in the country prior to the coup. Mm-hmm. So ECOWAS is really showing its cards, being, again, assertive and saying that the military force would be the last resort, but could be a possibility if President Mohamed Bazoum is not reinstated. Mm-hmm.
So, Nyaka, Professor Nyaka, like, okay, you know, this coup has been seen as threatening, actually, security across the Sahel. And if you look at the, we have a Sahel map region, the concern is that this can spread. And we've seen coups in the last few years, as has been mentioned, in the region. The question is there precedence where actually ECOWAS or the African Union has used force to reverse things when militaries have taken over, overthrown governments?
So I think the last time I saw, the last time I heard about ECOMOG, by the way, that's the name of the ECOWAS forces, it was in Liberia. It looks like it was for the right cause. But before I even go further, I just want to say that a war will be a worst case here in this situation, and then I am opposing military intervention by any force in the case of Niger, because it's not going to resolve the issue. There is a serious concern in Africa, and then the ambassador, Her Excellency Hilda, just said Africans want, Africa is changing. And then the situation is today, our people are also fighting against French neocolonialism. If you don't take that into account in this conversation, you're going to make a mistake. Like I said, Bazoum may have been overthrown for a wrong reason, but this is my position. If a president whose responsibility is to protect the integrity of a country, and then who is supposed to protect his citizens, if the president cannot protect himself and is taken hostage by his private guard, I think that this president is not worthy, you know, to be leading that country. That's my position.
Okay, now, you know, let me go to Madam Ambassador. There's the whole question of, you alluded to that, the peace mechanism of the African Union. So you've mentioned that the Nigerian president has kind of taken the lead. Can you quickly, please, help our viewers understand, how does the AU peace and security mechanism work? What actually kicks into place even as we witness this destabilizing forces in the West Africa region, the Sahel region?
Yeah, as I've said earlier, that the African Union has put in place mechanisms, instruments comprising the African Union Peace and Security Council, which is the standing decision-making organ of the AU for the prevention, management, and a resolution of conflicts. It is a collective security and the early warning arrangement intended to facilitate timely and efficient responses mm-hmm. to conflict and crisis situations in Africa. We have the panel of the wise, one of the critical pillars of the peace and security architecture of the African Union. Mm-hmm. Set up a five-person panel of highly respected African personalities from various segments of the society who have to make an outstanding contribution. We have made outstanding contribution to the cause of peace and security development on the continent. With the task to support of the peace and security of the chairperson of the commission. So these are the people that then we rush as African Union to put in place. They're already in place. It's a mechanism to start working on. But the region takes the lead. Mm-hmm. It's also my colleagues said in this panel.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. We get a sense of that. Ms. Kamara, we've seen those other countries in the West Africa that are led by the militaries have actually gone and lend their support to Niger. And the military in Niger actually said that if there's a military intervention, there will be massacre and chaos. So what does that really mean, the threat by Niger, but also the support we're seeing from those other countries in the Sahel?
Well, it's even more than that. So the Nigerian military did say that, but also the junta leaders of Burkina and Mali published a joint communique in which they said that if the ECOWAS were to intervene militarily in Niger, it would be a declaration of war on them. So I think, as Nyaka said earlier, the military intervention is not the favored option here. There have been high-level diplomatic negotiations with the Nigerian authorities to reinstate Bazoum, but it looks like, you know, we have to look at it very clearly and objectively. I think there is an alliance, whether in the region but also internationally, around the red line here. The main objective of the regional body, of the African Union, of the international partners of Niger is to reinstate President Bazoum. That is the red line that they've drawn in the sand. And that's one that they seem to be a lack of compromise on. So if the Nigerian authorities do not want President Bazoum to be reinstated, then I just don't see how this would not escalate. Mm-hmm.
Now, Professor Lagoke, you know, you mentioned your position on the President Mohamed Bazoum, but at the same time, you talk about the interference externally. But also we are seeing Russian flags being, you know, being shown by protesters. So what's happening? What's going on behind the scenes that we don't know?
Yeah, thank you, Vincent. I like all your questions. But that one, I was expecting it, and I'm glad you asked that question. Yeah, because when people talk about African issues, it's like there are things they don't want to take into account. We are experiencing exciting moment in Africa. It is another golden age of Pan-Africanism, a golden age of sovereignty. So when people are taken to the streets, be in Mali, in Niger, in Guinea, in Ivory Coast, everywhere in Central African Republic, the people are fed up of the European imperialism or neocolonialism, particularly that of the French. So because they know what France is doing, people think that Russia, the same way Russia yesterday helped African countries be independent, they think that Russia can help them to regain their respective sovereignties. That is what is happening. Mm-hmm. And it is not like people are being manipulated by the Russians. African wants to be free, mm-hmm. and they want to enjoy their resources. In the case of Niger, no one is talking about the uranium controlled by the French, while most of the country does not have electricity. These are issues that we need to discuss when we want to bring Bazoum back.
Yeah, and in fact, we will probably continue this discussion another time. But for right now, Ambassador Suka Mafute, Professor Lagoke, and Ms. Kamara, I want to thank you very much for your insights. Well,
thank
coming
you.
Up.
Thank you.
After the break, Voice of America's English to Africa service has been serving audiences on the African continent and the diaspora for 60 years. We'll hear from some of the old-timers and from the new leader of this service. Stay with us.
You're watching VOA's Red Carpet. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. Thank you so much for joining us each week right here on Red Carpet. We bring you the latest in...
to satellites, from broadcast to webcast, we've done it all since 1942.
Today, we span the world.
Congratulations, VOA English to Africa service, on your 60th anniversary. Today, we send congratulations and best wishes to the entire team. You have played a vital role in sharing public information and content, as well as reporting on important issues for Uganda and Africa at large. Your role in the media space has been invaluable, and you have become a lifeline to many people in Uganda, both politically and economically. We at NBS TV are immensely proud to have you as our partners. From us to you, congratulations to your 60th anniversary.
Happy anniversary, VOA English to Africa. For over six decades, we have been bringing you news and analysis across the African continent. The very best of our programming, including, of course, Straight Talk Africa. And we hope that you have enjoyed being with us, listening to our reports from across the African continent. Of course, we have grown, we have evolved, and today we continue to bring you the very best of African programming, now on radio, on television, and on the web. So here is to the next 60 years in African news. English to Africa, happy anniversary.
Well, the English to Africa service of the Voice of America has been providing news, information, and analysis to the audiences on the African continent and is turning 60 this week. The show, Straight Talk Africa, is part of the English to Africa family among 15 other radio and television shows. E2A, as we call it, has a dynamic multi-platform presence on social media and on the web on our VOA Africa website. But how did it all start? Well, let's go now to the longtime host of Straight Talk Africa, Shaka Sali, before Haiti Adams, who has since retired. Shaka has been with English to Africa service for over 30 years. Let's hear what he has to say about the longevity of the English to Africa service.
I definitely congratulate the Voice of America for covering the African continent for 60 years. And I hope that... They will have the courage and the wisdom to continue the coverage of the African continent. When I was recruited by the Voice of America, you had a great lady by the name Margaret Binder, who was the director of the Africa division. You also had an equally great guy, who was Dr. Gregory Alonso Pirio, the chief of the English to Africa. These two guys had a mandate. They had a mandate to make the Voice of America more relevant to the African audience. And there was an effort to begin coming up with what was characterized as the African voices and perspectives. And for the first time, I was part of a team that was recruited by the new English to Africa chief, Dr. Gregory Alonso Pirio. Gregory recruited African journalists from different parts of the continent He also established stringers on the continent who would be firing straight to the Voice of America. We basically brought the Voice of America much closer to the audience. And the audience respected that. Straight Talk Africa was a unique platform that gave me the opportunity and the privilege to serve the African people in terms of informing them accurately, objectively, about what was happening in and outside Africa. I'd like to be a little bit selfish and take this opportunity to thank my global and African fans, wherever they are, who complimented me and supported me for that very long haul that I was interacting with them live from Washington.
Well, Marilyn Selvey is one of the first journalists to work in the English to Africa service in the 60s. She spoke earlier with Haiti Adams.
This is the Voice of America broadcasting in English.
I started on January 3rd, 1963, and one by one we assembled and were so excited about starting programming to Africa. It was historic for VOA to do something that was broadcasting mostly African news from one part of the continent to another. We'd never done this before any place. And it was all because Africa was vast, was becoming independent. By 1963, there were 28 independent countries. 17 of them became independent in 1960 alone. We called it the Year of Independence. And there were opportunities for the United States to get involved with Africa in ways that we certainly could not when the countries were controlled by England, France, and Portuguese. We wanted to be involved. Certainly, there were economic reasons, but we wanted to be involved in principle to be helpful. And we thought at that point that we could do series, for example, on making democracy work. We knew how to run elections. We knew how to do these things, and we wanted to share it. In recent years, with the things that have happened here in the United States, our own democracy has certainly been shaken. And I think we could take lessons from the African countries on how to do things like run an election sometimes. But we were so hopeful then and so excited. There were many human challenges to get both African radio people, experts, broadcasters involved with us, as well as Americans who knew something about radio. In the 1960s, United States radio was principally short news, not in-depth programming, entertainment programming, we'll call it. Half an hour shows that people would listen to as for fun more, and then certainly music. But our schools, our universities, one of which I went to, had journalism departments that were geared to turning out print journalists. We were to go to work for newspapers. We had lots of them in those days compared to now. We had magazines, and we were more geared to that than we were to radio and certainly to TV. So we had to make those changes. And then there were the challenges of learning about Africa. I remember going to Howard University on Saturday mornings to take courses. One was in African economics. And there was just so much that we needed to learn. And at the same time, our challenge was to find African broadcasters who were willing to come perhaps for a 2 or 4 year tour at Voice of America. Only Liberia at that point had radio stations, independent stations, and there were three there. And so we got broadcasters from there. I remember an early one was Yvonne Barkley. And soon we got broadcasters from Radio Nigeria in Lagos. Joe Atwoda was the first, and his wife Mabel did some broadcasting for us. But It took a while, and then we usually got trained broadcasters who had worked for BBC. And when they finished their maximum number of years they could work in London, we invited them to please come and work in Washington. But finding broadcasters for stringers in Africa at first was nearly impossible. They just weren't there yet. So we indeed had our challenges. I guess we don't understand the digital age, and they certainly would not understand writing with typewriters, actually doing a script on a typewriter. And then with tape, we had to learn to edit it manually. It was brown tape, and then we had white splicing tape. And if you needed to make a correction, you sliced literally the brown tape with a razor blade and used the white tape to make corrections. Computers did not come on the scene for years, and we had to make that adjustment. And we broadcast by shortwave. There was no satellite for years. We also, in the Africa division, had a another branch besides the English branch that sent tapes to Africa, or sent materials by tape in diplomatic pouch and also by satellite. And so that started the idea of trying to get materials to Africa to be played on radio stations there. So there were a lot of ways that we worked to do this, but it's so removed now after 60 years that most VOA staffers today would never be able to understand what we did. I think that you're at a wonderful time now to work with the African stations and the African stringers and to know what's actually happening there. And I congratulate all of you who have been involved in this tremendous 60 years, and I wish you 60 years more.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm joined now by Ndimi Akimokalieri, VOA English to Africa Chief. Ndimi, welcome to Straight Talk Africa. Now, what is the future? It's been 60 years, but what is the vision now for the future of English to Africa service?
The future is big. But I want to say first, congratulations, Vincent, and of course the whole entire English to Africa service for just reaching this milestone, because as you know, in media, it's just a daunting task to stay abreast and on top of just basically an industry like this one. But to the question that you're asking, well, just based on research by USAGM, just to use Nigeria, 20% growth since 2018 from just under or just over 9% to now 20.8% increase just in Nigeria in terms of how many people access news, VOA English news content just in Nigeria alone. So you can imagine that's being one of the most populous countries. But then just to the topic that you had earlier today, talking about the coups in Niger and also just the general instability on the continent when you're talking about the climate change and the impact and the activities of Russia, China on the continent, Wagner Group, etc. Our task and our job and our mandate right now is bigger than it has ever been. So I can say that our future clearly is momentous and we've got a lot more to do. I want to identify certain areas that I think will eventually and of course has already started taking us deeper into the market. We have really strong partnerships that we've formed now with our affiliates, what we call broadcast partners. And through them and the collaboration that we have, we've been managing to really form strong partnerships and really get into the continent. And of course, new media. We have to get the youth on that platform.
We'll continue this conversation after this, Ndimi. We have to leave it there. Thank you very much and wish you actually the very best as you continue leading the service. This is Ndimi Akimokalieri, VOA English to Africa Chief.